This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Top of the hour, it is VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross right here at the Mint Gaming Hall, frankly, Kentucky. There's our closer, Jensen Lewis, back home in Cleveland, Ohio. We're going to go out to Las Vegas to catch up with a maestro, Mike Palm, later on this hour. That Jensen means, Jensen, you have to be on your toes, and we'll find out what is on the mind of the maestro. Lots to get to here, including a big slate, yes, in preseason football, and that's where we begin this hour's highlights and headlines.
Help your bottom line with today's highlights and headlines.
Information is key. We try to be an informative network out there for you people before you make those wagers on Thursday night football. We got a six-game slate tonight here in the preseason. Yes, we've seen some, obviously, with the Panthers and the Cardinals playing last week here, Jensen. For the others, it's going to be finally kickoff. Then we'll get to some games on Friday and Saturday. But besides the individual bets, what are you keeping your eye on here? Because obviously I think we all gravitate to those starters that might get limited time, and then we might not see them again until week one of the regular season.
I don't know if I take too much out of it because it's the first game where everyone's back out. It's very spring training for me. Like, I've been through it. I understand that guys are working on stuff. I don't take too much out of it, which usually gets me to a lot of unders because it's guys that don't play a lot that are getting out there. They get rambunctious. They're trying to prove a point. Maybe they overtry. To that end, there are some spots here, and credit Steve Mackinnon for some excellent systems and trends that you can tail. One in particular that I've got some plays on tonight. The conference foes that match up against each other with a total of at least 37 points. The under has been hitting north of about 65-68%. So this is a blind tail of the Steve Mackinnon systems here. Under 38.5, minus $1.02 for Colts and Patriots. I believe you told me that's down a point already to 37.5. And then I got two plays on the Cardinals and Raiders. Couple of systems coalescing here and has to do with the teams that play in the Hall of Fame game. Cardinals plus 1.5. at the Raiders. I'll take that because they are going to play their starters tonight. Did not see that, but we did see Carson Beck play really well. Raiders are going to get a lot of Fernando Mendoza tonight. First time in the NFL, first time against NFL defenses. I don't give a damn if they are backups. Let's see what the kid can do. And then I am going to play that under 41.5 for Cardinals and Raiders tonight. So three big plays, hopefully three winners for us on Thursday night NFL preseason football.
Let's go. We know that we will be tuning in as a country. I think it was 7 million people, Jensen, watched the Hall of Fame game a week ago. 7 million people, ratings bonanza. Getting ready to tee it up here in about 10 minutes. We'll get out there with young Jackson Koivin. We'll tee off to begin this iteration of the FedEx Cup playoffs. We know we're going to have it again next year. I wonder if there'll be any changes to it at all before we get to big changes in a couple years here in the PGA Tour. But Jensen, I did play the first guy off, and that's going to be Jackson Koivin. Grabbed him about 33-1 here for first round leader. Also played Ludvig Åberg, the big Swede, on a first round leader bet. So if you want to get those in before they tee off, you can. And that's my biggest plays right there. If you're watching here on FanDuel Sports Network, YouTube television, it's Ludvig Åberg. Top 20, including ties at minus $1.40, and laid $1.10 on young Jackson Koivin. And again, remember, people, there's only 70 players in the field. It is a no-cut event, but yet 20 people will be cut from this week to next week. We get to Bellerive in St. Louis for leg two of the FedEx Cup playoffs. We'll go from 70 to 50, so the players are omnipresent of that, Jensen, as they know, I got to get in the top 50 or else my season comes to an end.
Yep. What are you looking for as far as first round today? Because I know the weather is massively important here. It is going to be super duper hot and humid. Does that have you draw a line through some people, whether it be first round leader or also some outrights as well?
The only two guys that I'm playing is because I do think Jackson gets the real weather break here going off here in about 5 minutes, Jensen. I think that's going to be a big advantage. Hopefully it should be in the cooler conditions in Memphis. And then I'm hoping selfishly that it gets really, really hot in the afternoon for some of those bigger names when they go off. And maybe those conditions in that sweat box, it might be a little bit more difficult. So again, it's going to be Koivin and Ludvig for me, first round leader plays that I have on my ticket. We talked about this in hour one. Mark Walton has flipped the Lakers This is something you normally don't see this quickly. 14 months ago, he bought the team from the Buss family and said it was a lifelong dream to own this team. That dream, Jensen, has, I guess, expired in 14 months. Now, he does get $12.5 billion for this sale of this franchise. Anything more to read in to the sale of the Lakers?
Yes, he is under investigation for some potential fraud, and that is going to be a big reason why this sale had to happen and as quickly as it happened for the price tag of what it went for. I will connect further dots once more information surfaces, but I think we can read the tea leaves here. He is going to need to clear some things to avoid some severe penalties. But man, oh man, what a coup for Bob Iger, Josh Kushner. This is, again, one of the iconic North American franchises in all of sports. And for a cool $12.5 billion. Now the owners of the LA Lakers.
Pretty wild. A guy that used to play for that team is a 9-time NBA All-Star, Russell Westbrook, and he is gone now. He's going to retire after 18 years in the NBA. Boy, just feels like yesterday I've been watching him at UCLA, and you saw those high knees and the explosive play. We saw it certainly on display at OKC and beyond throughout his career. I don't know how people are going to remember him, Jensen, when he goes to the Hall of Fame. I think you and I were not voters, but I think he's going to get there one day to the Basketball Hall of Fame there in Springfield. I'm just going to think of him for that explosiveness, those triple doubles that he made almost routine. That's how great he was for a time.
Yeah, one of the highest value as far as player above replacement numbers, not only in the modern era of guys that are still active, but also all time top 30 in NBA history for that. So it's pretty remarkable career. Not a matter of if, probably just a matter of when Russell Westbrook finds his name in Springfield there for the Hall of Fame.
Oh, it's a matter of when the Rays are going to lose again. But right now, who knows? Because Jensen, they just completed a 9-0 perfect road trip. Like, that's the impressive part for me. Yeah, they're red hot, but they're doing this on the road. That's got to feel good if you're a Rays backer, and not so good if you're a Yankee backer.
Well, this is a team that I liked for most wins in August. They have really acquitted that pick quite well so far. But this has been a group that has just been so consistent in so many areas. Perfect road trip. Didn't have that on my bingo card. I will take it. The only team with 10 wins in the month of August right now. Hot on their heels, though. Chicago Cubs, San Diego Padres, come on down. They've got 9 apiece. What a start to the month for those three teams.
We've got two title fights coming up at UFC 330 on Saturday. Cannot wait for those. Great podcast, shameless plug. You got to check out First Strike wherever you get those pods. Had the father of analytics, Reed Kuhn, to break down the main event.
And when you have Islam Makhachev, and you could say top of the food chain, arguably, right? You look at those pound-for-pound lists, he might be that guy in a title fight against Ian Machado Gary. And Gary's one of those guys, Reed, that I wonder if there's a stigma or if that stigma is gone, that he was more hype than he actually is substance as he tries to get this crown away from Islam Makhachev. What are the numbers showing you in this main event?
Yeah, this is basically going to play out as a striker versus grappler, which is no surprise when you have Makhachev involved. He definitely owns the grappling game. But one thing you look for is, what is the takedown defense of the opponent, and how good are they at keeping this on the feet? And those are two things that Gary has actually been very good at. This is not the first grappler that he's faced, and yet he has managed to keep the fight standing almost 90% of the time, basically like 89% of the time, which is very unusual. You know, you think about half the fight takes place on the feet, and then there's clinch, and then there's ground game. He has a very good way of keeping the fight up, which is where he has an advantage. You look at the size, the guy is enormous for a welterweight. And so that's something that I don't factor into the models, is the fact that Makhachev earned most of those high performing metrics, but against smaller opponents.
That's right.
And he just recently moved up. So while he does have welterweight experience, it's not a lot. The statistics that I'm looking at were earned at lightweight against smaller opponents. So that is an unusual factor here. When I ran the models, even with Makhachev as a heavy favorite, they actually came out as a wash, which means, yes, I agree he's a favorite, but there's something in there I'm not seeing value in. But learning to back off what looks like a layup for a grappler is actually something that caught my eye. And then you layer in the factor that Gary has very good takedown defense, 80%. He's especially good in the clinch, which is where Makhachev lands most of his takedowns. That's what he does. Push you against the fence, eventually drag you down. Gary has that size. He might be able to use the underhooks and really elevate this and keep it standing, at least for an extended period of time. And so during those distance exchanges, he's going to be the busier fighter, the longer fighter, much longer fighter. While I say that this is a pass, it's not factoring in the size. If there's some folks out there that are like, you know, is it crazy to think that Gary might have a chance here? I'm not disagreeing with that. I think he does have a chance, especially if he is able to survive those clinch attempts. Either way, my angle here is on the over. I don't think Gary goes down easy. He certainly doesn't put Makhachev away very easily because Makhachev also has the outlet of just continuously diving for takedowns. So that's how I think this fight evolves. I think it's just going to be back and forth. Everybody knows the narrative here. The statistics do back that up. But I am not just saying that this is going to be a layup for Makhachev the way maybe the early odds implied. So he's still a favorite, but I'm going to be passing on.
Great stuff from Reed. Great stuff from Reed Kuhn, as always. Again, please like, subscribe to not only Visa by the Books, but also First Strike out there as well. Rob Moreno and I have a lot of fun doing this podcast each and every week, and we'll get to some of those official plays, but I'm with Reed, and that's why you saw me if you're watching the clip. I like the over here, 4.5. It is juiced at -$1.75. I think we're hitting the cards for the main event here on Saturday. By the way, Lou Finicaro on the program tomorrow. Cannot wait to get Lou's thoughts as well. Okay, when we come back, let's talk some baseball, Jensen Lewis. Your Rays are red hot. Will they keep it going? We'll discuss next. Daily Diamond, straight ahead.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books, right here on VSiN.
College football season is almost here, and betting it blind is a losing strategy. So we're going to help you with that. Get the VSiN College Football Betting Guide right now when you are a VSiN Pro subscriber. It is free with your subscription. So it's already got previews of all 138 FBS teams, our preseason top 50, power ratings, proven betting systems, and best bets from all of the sharpest minds here in the network. So that's not all. When you become a VSiN Pro subscriber, you're also going to get our NFL betting guide, the Fantasy Life Fantasy Football Guide, daily best bets, real-time betting splits, AI-powered prop projections, 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app. Try it today for as low as $9.99 or an even better deal. Lock in a full year and save 50% off with a VSiN Pro annual subscription. Head over to VSiN.com/subscribe right now. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Mike Palm will join the program in the very next segment from Las Vegas. Always like and look forward to our conversations with the maestro. But right now, Jensen, we got some teams going in some opposite directions here in Major League Baseball. That's where we begin today's discussion of the Daily Diamond. Boy, all of a sudden, when you look at some of the teams out there, teams like, say, the Rays that feel like they're just ascending, teams like the Pirates feel like they're just fading. It is amazing this time of the year, Jensen. Yeah, we always kid about it, right? Back in April and May, how they all matter the same. And this is kind of what we're talking about, because when you need to win those games, just because you need to get them now doesn't mean you're going to get them. I'm starting to look at some of these teams like the Pirates taking on the Marlins today. Marlins all of a sudden back in the good foot, four games in a row to the good. The Pirates, Jensen, what is happening? Because it feels like the Jolly Roger were taking water.
Well, the offense has really gone into a tailspin. And listen, going up against the Marlins pitching staff, not the way to get yourself right. That's for sure. No play on this game, at least initially for me right now. I want to go more to a desperation spot for the Seattle Mariners. My goodness, they finally get some runs last night, not able to hold a lead. They drop it 10-5 to the New York Yankees. And the way that that tailspin has been going, now losers of six in a row, including seven of their last 10. You are now 5.5 games back in the AL West. But more importantly, you're now four games back of a wild card spot trying to chase down the Texas Rangers. All that being said, if you're going to have a streak stopper, I would want Logan Gilbert on the mound, and that's where he is in the series finale against Max Fried today. Seeing a money line upwards of plus $1.33 on Novig, so I locked that in for a unit and a half play. Not only a desperation play for the Mariners, but one now where even in a losing effort, I feel like you figured a couple of things out offensively yesterday, and to get the early lead, you know, with a couple of homers there, especially from Julio Rodriguez, that can tend to spark a club a little bit. So wouldn't be shocked if the Mariners kind of get out again on Fried, who we know has been one of the tougher left-handers at his home ballpark. This feels like put up or shut up for the Seattle Mariners. You have got to be able to salvage a game of this series. So I'll take a chance on the Mariners plus $1.33 on the money line.
Jensen, they're 5.5 games back of the Stros. Okay. They've lost 6 games in a row. The Mariners, I mean, we were looking at them at the beginning of the year and saying, well, they might be the favorites to win the American League this year. Not that you want to go back to the well here, but if people are not invested in Seattle at this point, could you look at to make the playoffs as a possibility here? Or do you think, you know, barring today, as you said, if it goes south today, then that ship has sailed?
No, you could definitely look at that. I mean, let's be honest here. This is still one of the best pitching staffs in all of Major League Baseball. Their upcoming road actually is a little more arduous than people can realize. You're going to go to Houston, which is actually a team they have handled quite well. So sometimes you got to see a team that you've beaten, and you know maybe that's what jumpstarts them. But this road trip is a doozy. Okay, you finish up against the Yankees today. You go to Houston, then an off day, and you head up to Milwaukee, who's been leaking some oil here now after getting swept by the San Diego Padres. Then you got to come back home against the Chicago Cubs. So they're in the fight, man. I mean, this is as arduous a road as you're going to face at this point in the season. But I do think they find a way to get this series finale victory today, and maybe that gets them jump-started deep in the heart of Texas starting tomorrow night.
They are plus +475 to make the postseason. They're plus +650 to win the division. So there is still that two-headed monster there and that road that they might be able to travel to see if they can get that done. One team that I advised just over a week ago was the Blue Jays at 13-1, a numbers play for me. When I saw it and I looked at their path, I went, man, it's really difficult. And by the way, if you look at the Blue Jays schedule, it's been difficult, but they've been navigating it really, really well. So they've got a 4-game sweep potentially today against the Red Sox. They beat them the first 3. Then they got the Yankees and they got the Rays. I was looking at the pitching matchups. And then the Yankees again, they're going to see Cam Schwitler twice in that span. It's not getting easier for the Jays. And yet, Jensen, they just keep winning.
A chance for a 4-game sweep of the suddenly vulnerable Boston Red Sox here, who have now lost 5 in a row after that surreal 31-6 run. We knew that there was going to be regression. Didn't know it would come this quickly as far as, you know, you lose the amount of games you have in a row. But hey, the Blue Jays keep fighting. They just got to 500 at home with that win yesterday. Now 31-31. They've won those 3 games in a row, 7 of their last 10. They're a game and a half back of the Rangers for the final wild card spot. You also mentioned how ridiculously difficult in the division their upcoming schedule is. So again, they'll see the Yankees twice here in the next 3 series. Got to go to Tampa Bay, which has been a house of horrors for every American League East opponent that's come down there. But you're trending in the right direction as far as getting some timely offense back into their bullpen. Has wavered sometimes, but they found a way with late offense to get it across the line. I think you're going to feel really good, though, that Dylan Cease is going to face the Yankees twice. He's going to get him in that series finale at home on Sunday. And then it looks like he is lined up for a Saturday start in the Bronx next weekend. Hey, this has been a really great story here the last couple of weeks. They buy and sell at the deadline. You get Jose Soriano, who looked really good. You've got Shane Bieber, mm-hmm. who I think is trending better. But it's all about the offense. You need this offense to continue to ascend. And for God's sake, Vladdy, hit a damn homer at home.
My goodness.
For the life of everybody. What a fun team here the last couple of weeks. And I think they are playing with a confidence they have not had at any point this year.
Yeah, amazing. Did have some people. I know Jimbo reached out to me on social media, watches this show, listens to the show, said he got 9-1 based on our recommendation a week ago. So good numbers to get there. Down inside of 4-1 now to make the playoffs with this big time run that the Blue Jays have been on. Looks like the Cubs, man, they went to D.C., Jensen, and they got the bats going. Breggs with a massive night last night here. Another big offensive night here for the Cubs. You know, Brewers getting swept away. Cubs looking good all of a sudden, Jensen. I wonder if we might have a race now for the division title. Forget about seeding in the postseason.
They're three games back. We now have a race, indeed. They've won 3 in a row, 8 of their last 10. And now that the Brewers getting swept by the Padres have been 500 their last 10. I did pick the Cubs to win this division in our VSiN MLB betting guide beginning of the year. They have now found their stride, literally and figuratively, from not only having the offense going, but at the same time that their pitching staff has been able to turn in some quality outings. If you look at where the Cubs are moving forward, and by the way, today, don't even mess around. It's just the over. I don't know how you're going to keep this offense at bay the way they're going. Now, if you were, Cade Cavalli's the guy. Cade Cavalli would be the guy to try and limit a hot offense. So if you want to tempt fate and play an under at Nats Park, to each their own, I'm not walking the plank with you on that. It would be over or pass for me in this series finale. But think about what's upcoming for the Cubs here, Dave. They return home tomorrow. 3 against the Cardinals, who are still in the fight for the wild card. Then 3 against the Chicago White Sox. As we know, the Windy City Series has now taken on an incredible amount of performance. It did when it was at Wrigley Field earlier the year. Who knows what we could be seeing? Two first place Chicago teams head to head on Monday at Wrigley Field. What a sight that would be for the North and the South Siders.
You know, very quickly, you know, been looking at the Mariners and what's wrong with them as they keep drifting away. How about the Rangers, Jensen? We'll talk more about this in hour number 3 as well, but you know, they lose 2 in a row now to the Angels. It's those type of games here when you're not only trying to get back in the divisional race against H-Town, but, you know, again, taking on Anaheim tonight, these type of losses, they feel like they just matter more when you're playing the weaklings, at least in your own division.
Yeah, you need your ace. Need Jacob DeGrom to come up big tonight. Walbert Urania, not the customer, though, that you want to try and do it against. He has been sensational. Ooh. One of the young budding stars in the rotation for the Angels. The Rangers have got their hands full here. I got to tell you, that flight for Houston yesterday afternoon and into the evening, where they probably love watching the Rangers struggle, now extending that lead in the American League West. What a race it's going to be.
Absolutely wild. And again, you see the Mariners nine times. I don't remember Ferris being sick 9 times. 9 games under 500. Unbelievable. Mike Palm, the maestro, what is on his mind? We'll find out next right here on VSiN by the Books.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis here with you on this Thursday morning. And as we do each and every Thursday, we always catch up with the great Mike Palm, kind enough to join us every early Thanksgiving, every Thursday here in Las Vegas. Mike Palm is the VP of Operations at Circa the D and the Golden Gate Casino and joins us now here in the Progressive Guest Line. Good morning to you, Maestro. And I got to ask you, what is on your mind today and what are you seeing at the books? Are you guys taking a lot of action on preseason football? Are people dying to get to the window to bet American football?
Well, I think dying, Dave, is a strong word, and good morning to both of you. But obviously there's interest in the game because it's football. It's the NFL.
There we go.
And so folks are going to bet it, maybe not to the extent that we will see when the calendar flips to September, but we'll still get decent action. I mean, it'll be interesting when we close the books tonight to see which sport had more money written per game on it. Will it be Major League Baseball? Will it be preseason NFL? Will it be WNBA? I'll answer those questions next week, but I think they're all three. There's arguments to be made. I'm not K. Dave. I'm just telling you right now, the 5 largest bettors at Circus Sports in terms of volume in 2025, right? and 2026 all bet the WNBA. Okay. So, I mean, it creates tremendous volume.
Wow. Okay. So we might have to put a pin in that, because if we do have the eventual lockout and we lose games next year, I told Dave he's going to have to brush up on his Asia Wilson and much more for the WNBA in next summer. Before then, and for anyone that has not seen the Circuit Survivor documentary, episode 4 last night, we got the big one and started to take some big hits in it. It's awesome. Big is an understatement, considering ahead of pace for where Circuit Survivor signups are so far, Mike. For this year, how far ahead are we this week? I mean, it was great for Bet Bash last week, but it looks like it is astronomically ahead year over year.
Since we're 85% ahead as of yesterday. We haven't got this morning's report yet, right? But going into yesterday with 32 days left, now we have 31 days to sign up left. We are 85% ahead. Roughly, we'd done, 4,500 last year, and we've done over 8,000 this year. Right. So 8,200, something like that. So obviously it's very difficult to maintain that pace because of sheer capacity the final week, even the last 2 weeks. But boy, it would certainly seem to me like we're going to go through 25 million and maybe get close to 30.
I'll back to that conversation here in a second. I'll let Jensen watch and I'll take your word for it. That's for sure. Mike, I do want to get back to the preseason football here, because we get the kind of feel that this is pros versus Joes when it is preseason football. Do you see that a lot? That, again, we always find that regular season, those numbers are hardened a little bit, harder to find that edge. And it feels like the real sharps out there feel like in preseason, that's where they can actually find a bigger advantage.
We get ahead of these moves because, you know, the number moves much more quickly because it's information. And if somebody gets information, it's not going to take too many bets for us to move a number here. And of course the limits are a lot lower in the preseason than they are on an NFL Sunday, where we've got guys betting $500,000 a game. So this is certainly a different ball game. I know there's been in recent trends, though, that playing against the move was successful for the most part last year. So it's interesting. You also tend to believe that these games, when the totals are very low, they tend to go under. You know, when they're sub 34 and stuff like that in these games, they tend to go under. And then we saw in the Hall of Fame game, you know, a shootout. So who knows? But there's guys that like Chuck Edel that are really good at this, that specialize in this time of the year. And so hats off to them. They are locked in and make a good piece of change doing it.
Yeah, I'm sure they do. Speaking of change, Carson Beck still owes me money from the national championship game. If he performed the way that he did in the Hall of Fame game, we would be that much richer. We did get the exacta home at 24-1 for Indiana and Miami to meet in the national title game, so we at least saved some face there. How, Mike, in your mind, how would you handicap the two teams that played already have a preseason game underneath their belt? And we'll focus on Cardinals Raiders tonight, because it is the Cardinals getting Jacoby Brissett and the starters out there for at least a little bit. And then Carson Beck, we would assume, comes in after that. And then we will get the first look at Fernando Mendoza. Clint Kubiak, excellent coach speak interview, saying, yeah, it'll be several reps. We just don't know how many, and I don't need to tell all of you how many. But you're in your eyes, how do you size up a team that has already played versus a team making their preseason debut?
I think what you learn more about is in these joint scrimmages, right, where these teams come together in practice. That probably tells you more about the teams than even these games do. And if you can get people that are there watching those joint practices, I think you learn a lot more about these teams and how they're going to perform in these games. In general, obviously, we talk about teams that have a game underneath their legs, especially in the midst of a regular season where you're coming back from a break and one team's played a game and one team hasn't, and you don't get your body back up to game speed. I don't know if it's that pronounced of a difference, if the Cardinals have that big of an advantage tonight because they've played a game already, but for the fact that they're along their path in preseason of where they're going to play their starters more as opposed to what the Raiders are going to do. The Raiders' case here is very interesting because of Mendoza. I mean, that keeps interest here about, is this kid going to get a chance to start? And how early in the season is he going to get a chance to start, right? It's really when, not if. And, of course, that affects everybody's future bets on what they want to do with Offensive Rookie of the Year.
And speaking of those future bets, because you're right, I think all it did last week was accelerate the timeline. If you're Michael Ford to say, I've got to get Carson Beck in this game at some point in the regular season, you saw that number get as short as 15-1 in some places, Mike. It's leveled back out to about 22-1 here on Carson Beck. And just hearing some of those guys, as you mentioned, that watch him in practice every day, they are starting to believe like he actually might be the better option over Jacoby Brissett, who, even though he got that new deal, it's not a big deal to come back at starter money, if you will, in the NFL.
The thing about Brissett, Dave, is he was a statue 4 years ago, and he's only getting older. It's just you have to have some mobility in this league unless you have a really elite arm. My worry with Beck is it's great, but maybe he becomes a starter in the first month of the season. I still worry about when you get to the NFL, these turnovers are so damning. You can overlook them a little bit in college because you have dominant teams, but this guy has a propensity to turn the ball over. And if he does that in the NFL, as the game speeds up and the defenses get more complex, it will be tough for him to make a case if, you know, he goes out there and throws 8, 9, 10 interceptions.
Hopefully I'm not preempting the Palms pressing three, but I think we are now in position to look at a couple of National League West teams in earnest here, Mike. The Dodgers could not have gotten a better respite with the Royals, albeit, boy, did they allow them to stay around a long time in the first couple of games. By rights, they probably should have lost a couple of them. But your impressions now of what San Diego just did to Milwaukee and now what they've done the last couple of weeks, the Diamondbacks have been on a surge of late. Do we have a race in the National League West?
No, I don't think we have a race. I mean, Let's not forget the Dodgers are playing their third string catcher. They need to get Will Smith back, right? Nobody talks about Will Smith and how important Will Smith is to this team over the course of this championship run. This guy, you take him out of the lineup, you say take Freeman, take Betts, Ohtani, and all these people, and then don't talk about Will Smith. This catcher, you, Jensen, can testify to how important the catcher is. Look at Ohtani's pitching stats with Will Smith compared to rushing or anybody else, right? It's night and day. And then think about his bat in the lineup compared to what they're getting right now. And you saw Snell come back. I thought he had good velocity. Glasnow's on the path back. You know the Dodgers are going to look much different here as we head into September and October than what they do right now. You're absolutely right. Against a Major League Baseball team, they might have lost a couple games this week in this series, but it is the Royals. By the way, I like to slam on the Royals extra because, you know, Dave bets them, but they are a great team to watch defensively. They are really good. I put them right up there with the Cubs as the best defensive teams in baseball.
Great. It's got me a lot of tickets cash this year, Mike. Thanks for that. Let me ask you two teams here, one in the American and one in the National League, that are fringe participants now here to make a run to make the postseason. Pittsburgh has drifted to 6 games back in the wild card here, which is pretty remarkable here after their great start to the year. And what about Seattle now? When you look at them in the American League, I'm seeing about 4 games back here. Obviously, they can still get in and win the division if the Astros falter. Out of those two teams that I think maybe a month ago we thought were playoff teams, do you have any hope that either one of those two teams can make a late run?
Neither. Skeen's fastball is down 6 miles an hour in their 6 games. But forget about that. Also dumb, very poorly managed team, the Pirates. I put them right up there with the Twins. And then Seattle has the most overrated starting pitching staff, maybe in the history of baseball. Every year we talk about it, we talk about this great starting staff. And look, I think a lot of them have regressed. I think Kirby's regressed. I think Wu's regressed. Luis Castillo got a new lease on life in Chicago, it looks like. Who could have seen that performance coming last night? But I'm out on both of those teams, Dave.
I don't blame you. I have finally broken up with the Mariners. I told Dave I'm as loyal as they come. But you've done enough attrition to me. And God, I tell you, you're right, though, on the regression for the rotation. No question about it. A lot of those guys nowhere near their performance from a year ago.
Yeah, Royals have beaten me up for a second year in a row, Mike. Just walk me off the ledge next year if I want to bet them preseason, all right? Don't let me do it again. All right, when we come back, we'll find out what is on your mind, the maestro. That's all next with Palms Pressing 3.
Beeson.
We are back, VSiN by the books, on this Thursday morning. Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis here. We always talk about VSiN after dark. You should hear the conversation sometimes during the breaks. As entertaining, Jensen, I would think, as they are during the show sometimes. Right now, each and every week, we have to figure out what is on the mind of the maestro. It is time for Palms Pressing 3.
Pressing? Yes, I say it's pressing.
This is Palms Pressing 3.
Now, my mother told me never to answer a question with a question.
Sir, my client has answered every question asked by this committee with the utmost sincerity.
Jensen, we're getting to that point of the season where some teams have to face reality. This just isn't their year. And once that happens, they have to decide whether it makes sense to keep sending their most valuable arms out there in meaningless games or shut them down and protect them for next season. If you're one of these valued pitchers, do you actually want to be shut down? Or does the competitor you say, give me the ball, because you love the pitch and you don't want your teammates thinking you're being protected while they're still out there grinding every night? But here's the other side I've always wondered about. If you're not one of the pitchers being protected, do you start thinking, wait a minute, why is my teammate's arm worth protecting more than mine isn't? Does the organization basically consider my arm expendable? Jensen, does that ever become a real conversation between players, or even an unspoken resentment towards the protected player or the organization itself inside a major league clubhouse?
Yeah, boy, really good points all across the board here. Let me go from personal experience. 2008, I ended up becoming the closer for the last 2 months of the season. Went 13 for 13 in save opportunities and thought I did a pretty good job of auditioning and saying, hey, you know what? You got the answer in-house here. They went out and they signed a guy by the name of Kerry Wood for 2 years, $20 million. And I'm like, I could have done the job for that. So, yes, down the stretch, we come here in 2008. We went from a first-place team in 2007 to a last-place team. We sold CC Sabathia at the trade deadline. We waved the white flag. But we were a pretty young team at that point, Mike. So there were a lot of kids, if you will, within, you know, 2 years or fewer of service time. We didn't know any better. We were just trying to go out and win a job for the next season. I think you'll probably see that, you know, with a lot of other teams. The Mets, I told Dave this for a while, it's a perfect example of a team that does have veterans that didn't have a great start to the season. And Francisco Lindor and Bo Bichette, they're playing much better. At least Bichette is right now. But you have the A.J. Ewings, you have the Carson Benjes, you have the Jared Youngs that are trying to solidify their spots for next year. And by that token, on the pitching side, you know, you have a Zach Thornton, you have a Nolan McClain. Like, you're still trying to achieve some personal goals. And then the one last thing, and I'll throw it to you on this, Dave, is, you know, you've interviewed plenty of football guys where those last couple of weeks, we've talked about it when we know that there's contract incentives in there. You don't want to give up an opportunity because, for me, that was a huge thing in arbitration in 2010. Mike, I think I told you the story. Tim Belcher, our pitching coach, were in Chicago to finish the season. I had pitched the night before the regular season finale to get my ERA under a 3 to 2.97. He came up to me in the clubhouse the next morning. He goes, I just happened to check the stat sheet and saw where your ERA is. Barring something unforeseen, hell of a job for, you know, this season. Shook my hand. I'm like, oh, that's like a difference of $150,000 when it comes to arbitration getting below a 3 ERA. So it's a very real thing from contract incentives. Guys are aware of it regardless of sport. And, you know, so that's something you definitely play through the finish line on. No question about it.
That was very nice of Jensen to try to make me feel better about the dumpster fire that's been the Mets season this year. I do appreciate that.
Question two, Jensen. If we throw out Dean Kramer's two starts for the Twins since he was acquired at the trade deadline, Minnesota starting pitchers have allowed a run or more in the first inning in 9 of their last 10 starts. The Twins also haven't led after the first inning in a game since July 26th. What is it in a team's preparation or pitching approach that has led to such futile results in first innings of games?
It's amazing, right? And for whatever reason, people would say like, oh, the ninth inning is so different as a closer. Well, yeah, but you know, if you see the opener now, like it's the ninth inning in the first inning, if you go that route. For starting pitchers, Mike, there are some guys that they are kind of that locomotive that needs a little bit to get out of the station. And once they get going, They're in there. We used to have guys that would simulate the first inning like they would in football. Dave, and you know this well. A head coach would script the first 15 plays. That's how we're going to do it. Mm-hmm. And we already know what we're doing. We used to have some starting pitchers that when they finished their warm-up, they would throw the first inning. Starting catchers there were sequencing. They wanted to simulate. We're already going through it. I'm already visualizing. I'm already executing. So you had the dry run. I don't know if they do it these days or if guys are just like, for whatever reason, they just stink in the first inning. But it is a wild, it's a great betting trend to follow, though. Home and away,
ooh,
yes, run first inning, no run first inning. Mike, I know it's something you and I pay attention to. But when you see a guy that especially on the road has struggled for whatever reason, great auto fade positions on a lot of those starting pitchers.
I would just say this. The Wynn Twins are a half game out of a wild card berth here in the American League. Mike Palm, they're plus 250 to make the postseason. Would you be interested, even with all these struggles in the first inning, of grabbing a big plus money? It feels like a double dog dare.
Yeah, I can't. I just can't. That's why I would never take the Twins to protect my White Sox ticket. And I haven't taken the Guardians. My fear, of course, is the Tigers, who kept Scuba last year and tanked. And now they shipped him to L.A. and they're surging. All right. Question three. I found this really interesting, Jensen. After his first game at Wrigley Field, not his first start, but his first time being in the dugout at Wrigley Field, Kevin Gausman commented how he couldn't have gone to a more starkly different place in Wrigley Field than what he had come from in the Rogers Center in Toronto. He mentioned that his wife told him how it, quote, feels so much different here, and that he explained to her because it is about just the baseball here. He remarked several times about Wrigley Field's lack of a huge third deck. Jensen, how important is the atmosphere of a ballpark to a player's performance and ultimately the decisions he makes once he has obtained free agency?
Yeah, well, free agency for a pitcher. You don't want to go to Colorado. You didn't want to go to Arizona for the humidor. You did want to go to T-Mobile Park in Seattle. You did want to go to, you know, Petco Park there in San Diego. But the atmosphere, hey, as someone who's pitched at Wrigley Field, three straight day games and the insanity of those fans. Like, we would come in, you know, right behind that right field line to get into the clubhouse. And already the bars at 9 a.m. is just, I mean, it's insane. It's a Tuesday and these people are just absolutely getting after it. And then, you know, it used to be, Mike, where the bullpens were on the field. So if you didn't have like a jacket on or whatever, you were just getting manhandled by some of the fans there. It was always bad at Fenway Park. Visiting bullpen there just stinks. You get all the, you get all the accents and the drunkenness and all that. But it is a huge deal as far as home field advantage. And I'm just speaking from the pitching side. When you know you got a ballpark that is really advantageous to you, you take advantage. As a hitter, I don't know a hitter that has turned down wanting to go to Wrigley, even though you have the wind fluctuations. That has always been an incredibly friendly hitter ballpark for many, many decades. So it is part of it. You definitely, especially as a starter, will factor that into your free agency decisions. No question about it.
Cubs, by the way, boys, are now the fourth betting choice to win the pennant at 6-1. Conversely, in the American League, the White Sox, sixth betting choice to win the pennant. The American League at 11-1. Might give a good pulse on that city right there. Either one of those numbers that might intrigue you.
Well, everybody on the north side sure is excited, right, about the Cubs' surge. They're only three games back of the Brewers right now and two games back of the Dodgers. Think of that. The Brewers with the best record in the National League, the Dodgers and the Braves one game behind them, and the Cubs three games behind the Brewers. And, of course, so far ahead of schedule on the south side. We want to apologize to all our Nesson audience for Jensen's comments about the accents and whatnot. final question on pressing three plus one here, like the Bob Barker hole-in-one plus one on the Price is Right. Jensen, in light of Michelle Tafoya securing the Republican nomination for the Senate from Minnesota, have you started an exploration committee in Ohio?
A Lewis Ross administration, you know, we have had a groundswell of support, not only in the great state of Ohio, but all across these great United States. And Mike, when you get that kind of bipartisanship, where it's not only those on the left, the right, and the middle that want to see more Lewis Ross, boy, it really emboldens you to want to begin those explorations and think that, you know, Dave, you and I have figured out a lot on this program. If many of our elected leaders just listen 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern weekdays here on VSIN, we'd have world peace. We'd have an effective economy. There's a lot of things we can solve here on this program day in and day out.
I think so, too, until they do the Oppo research on me and then they find out all those Royals tickets that have been burnt up the last 2 years. That could be problematic, Mike.
Or that summer you spent as Arthur Ashe's houseboy in Virginia Beach. Won't appeal to your base.
We don't want the people to know about that, Mike, but you've just made that public. We got much more to get to next.